Fifi Peters is leading the conversation all across South Africa right now. Stay tuned to SAFM.
The SAFM Market Update is brought to you by Shift. Get Shift, the global money app powered by Standard Bank, and get the best forex rates for traveling, shopping, and investing, no matter where you bank.
Good evening. Welcome to the Market Update, the SAFM Market Update with MoneyWeb, coming to you from a different location today. Accra, the capital city of Ghana, is where I'm at, located west of Africa, as many of you know, about a five-hour flight or so from Johannesburg. I can say that it's 4 p.m. in the afternoon here in Osu, where I'm broadcasting from. I know it's 6 p.m. In South Africa, but thanks to technology, we're able to be in the same time zone at the same time. And thanks to technology, we're able to work anywhere sometimes. Hopefully, when needed, we'll have a smooth broadcast. Coming up on the show today, it has been a really good day for the JSE, a really strong day for the JSE, and that's thanks to Naspers and Prosus. They essentially stole the entire show for the market, and we'll be finding out what it is that investors liked about the announcement that did come out of the group today. And I can tell you that it wasn't their results, even though they were released earlier today. So listen in on that conversation. Just for better and more informed analysis around Naspers and Prosus, giants on the JSC. And hopefully that analysis will help you make your mind as to whether you should buy the stock, whether you should hold it, or whether you should sell it. Also on the show today, we had results out of PPC. They are the one of the biggest cement companies here in South Africa, a really significant player. However, Zimbabwe seems to have taken the shine off the company's results this time around, and cost pressures have certainly eaten into profits. We'll cement the road ahead with the CEO of PPC and talk to the numbers in just a moment. The JSE today welcoming a new member to its stable, a company called CA Sales, which today listed on the JSE main board. Now, they're coming from this Cape Town Stock Exchange already, but they'll be joining us on the show to tell us more about their move to the Johannesburg Stock Exchange and what their plans are. Yeah, I'm really interested in that. So just to see if this is also one that you should be buying for your portfolio or not. And then personal finance tax season is starting on Friday, and there's some new changes coming in from SARS that you should know about. Listen in to better inform you on the tax season process. Hopefully it will make your life a little bit easier this time around. Let us know what you think about the show. The hashtag to use is Market Update. Tweet us at MoneyWeb News. Tweet me at Fifi Peters.
Fifi Peters on SAFM.
Well, first up, a look at the markets and how your money worked for you in today's session. And it was pretty good if you make money when the JSE finishes higher, 2%, 2.2% higher, as was the case in today's session. I can say that it wasn't good for everyone, though. We did see a bit of pressure coming to the financial, the banking stocks, and also some smaller players. But let's get the take from Gary Boyson. He is the portfolio manager at Rand Swiss. Gary, How's it? Happy Monday. It seems like it was for the market, and that happiness was driven by Naspers and Prosus today. Just tell us more about why the market reacted so favorably to the two stocks today on a day that they came out with their results.
So it was a very happy Monday for the market. So as you said, all the up around 2.2% and in the up 4.72%, but all being dragged up by Naspers and Prosus. So Naspers finishing the day up 22.79% with Prosus up 18.19%. So a significant move higher. And as you said, it definitely wasn't the results that got everyone excited. If you actually look at the underlying results, we did get a trading update from Naspers on the 15th of June, but even so, we did see a miss on expectations. If you look at the fully adjusted earnings per share, they were up $1.93 versus estimates of around $2.73. They made an operating loss. Revenue came in at $6.87 billion compared to estimates of $7.13 billion. So the results themselves weren't particularly good. And what I think really just got the market going was the fact that they're going to pursue an open-ended share buyback. And they're going to fuel this with a sale of shares in Tencent. So anyone who's followed Naspers and Prosus for any amount of time understands that they trade at a significant discount to their largest investment, which is Tencent. They own around 29% stake in Tencent. And if you look at the underlying gap between their net asset value, if you do a sum of the parts and SOTP, compared to their market cap, you can see that the Naspers and Tencent shares just don't attract the kind of valuation that you would expect given the price of a listed entity like Tencent. So if you look at Friday's valuation, for example, Naspers, or at least Prosus's net asset value, if you add all its listed groups together and you try and put a valuation on some of its unlisted businesses, was sitting at around 2.75 trillion rand. That said, the market cap was only sitting at about 1.82 trillion rand. So there's a large gap between the two. And obviously, with the announcement today, Bob van Dijk and the team are going to start to sell down the Tencent stake. They're going to use that money then to go and buy Naspers and Prosus shares in the open market. And that is just what investors have been wanting to hear for a long, long time. They've in the past avoided it, calling it financial engineering. But I think with the losses that they've taken on the equity accounted Tencent, with the sell-off in tech that we've seen this year, enough is enough. And obviously there's been a lot of shareholder agitation as well. And that got the market going. And I mean, if you weren't in it, you certainly missed out.
Mm-hmm. Did it get you going? Were you also a buyer on the news today?
We hold Naspers and Prosus in both. We hold Prosus in our European portfolios, and we hold we hold Prosus in our local portfolios as well. So we already have an equity allocation to it. So we've really just had the view that that there is a fundamental disconnect between the value of Prosus and Naspers shares, and that it should be in portfolio. So we weren't necessarily buying in. I mean, the move happened very, very quickly. Obviously, in the morning's markets reprice incredibly quickly. So there wasn't really time to be buying into it at this stage, but certainly I think enjoying a view that's playing out.
Mm-hmm. But not everyone had a good day. It wasn't a pleasant experience for all stocks and all sectors on the JSE today. Just looking at what the banks did, they were down 1.5%, let's call it, and also some pressure in the small caps arena today. What was the reason that influenced the selling off of banks in today's session, Gary?
I think, in part, it probably is recessionary fear. So we came into the day with a very, very strong S&P 500 on Friday. That was up over 3%. And, we had some decent Chinese numbers this morning, and also the idea that China might be opening up slightly. But you still get the sense that there is this real fear in the overall market that that we are facing a much very inflationary environment, and that the chance of a recession is very high. We've obviously got central banks around the world hiking interest rates aggressively. We've got the Fed hiking interest rates. Our local central bank, the South African Reserve Bank, obviously has to almost follow suit, even though we don't have the growth potentially to warrant some of the interest rate increases. We'll have to follow what happens overseas. And normally when interest rates go up slightly, you do get the endowment effect, so you do see that actually feeding into banking shares. But banking shares have been fairly robust on the market overall. And I think maybe just a little bit of fear creeping into the market around recession. And as I said, all the focus was on the industrials today, and I think the financials just taking a little bit of a breather. So with that, I mean, we did have Absa down around 4%, First Rand down around 2.3%, and Nedbank around 2%. But I think that's potentially just generally general recessionary fears. Nothing sitting on the news feeds at the moment.
Mm-hmm. And the Rand, I think largely trading in similar ranges that we did see late last week when it first broke below 16 Rand to the dollar. But I do know that it's also a pretty busy week for markets this week, if we take the fact that there's some data in the form of GDP figures that are expected out of the US sometime this week. We've also got some inflation figures that are also expected out of the US this week. And locally, the Reserve Bank is going to release their quarterly bulletin. Just talk to us about the market's reading of the Rand in today's session and what could happen later on this week as all this other data is released.
No, I think volatility is going to remain in the local currency. So our local currency is one of the more volatile emerging market currencies, and as such, you know, to see the kind of moves that we saw today, where we got an initial strengthening early in the morning, we got a weakening all the way out to around 50.90 to the dollar, and then almost around the close of the equity session, finished back at about 15.80 where we came into the day. So it was a very, very choppy day for the local currency, but you know, I think that volatility is not going anywhere. As you said, you know, very busy week on the economic front. So yeah, as you said, US GDP, we've got, you know, last week was really dominated by various Fed speakers, so the US Federal Reserve speakers. We have, you know, two Fed speeches on the 28th and the 29th as well. So I think the theme of volatility is definitely going to continue. And what we've seen is, I think, a general sell-off in emerging markets. In emerging market currencies this year, just as you see the slightly better interest rates in the US and developed markets, the carry, what we call the carry trade, does look like it's starting to unwind. And when investors are a little bit more conservative, they will seek you know, the protection of the dollar. And it's nice now that if you're looking at a US 10-year, for example, you can potentially get around 3%. So you are seeing money flow towards the developed markets. That said, there is definitely a disconnect between the weakness of the rand, let's say, and outflows that we're seeing, you know, from Chinese markets. You know, while EMs in general have been selling off, the South African rand has definitely been faring better than you know, the other, let's say, BRICS nations. We know what's going on in Russia, of course, but I think the feeling around why South Africa is South African currency at least is performing better as part of the, if you want to call it, the BRICS basket, is that we are benefiting from, you know, a geographic distance from the Ukraine conflict. We've seen that we've seen a change in trade flows where China has been increasing imports of things like Russian oil, you know, as the EU put sanctions in place. And I think that has just prompted investors to kind of seek a little bit of safety and pull a little bit of money out of the Chinese markets. That said, the South Africa, obviously with the geographic distance, benefiting a little bit from that, but you know, when we're sitting in a world where, you know, we still have China, you know, yes, the lockdowns are reducing, but still, you know, affected by COVID lockdowns, we have still an aggressive conflict in the Ukraine, and I suppose the specter of looming inflation thanks to the supply chain disruptions, which is a very new type of problem facing so many new market participants. I think volatility is still going to be here. We're going to see definitely the currency moving around as people try and gauge where is the best place to put their money.
All right. Gary, thanks so much for that detailed analysis there, just setting us up for the trading a week as well. Gary Boyson, Portfolio Manager at Rand Swiss.
Phoebe Peters on SAFM.
Today, CA Sales became the 313th company listed on the Johannesburg Stock Exchange's main board. It is a company that operates in the fast-moving consumer goods segment. It provides a number of services for its clients, including warehousing, distribution, marketing, and selling. And its clients are actually widespread across the continent in quite a number of countries. So we do've got Duncan Lewis, the CEO of CA Sales, on the market update for more. Duncan, I suppose congratulations is in order for your debut on the JSE. How would you describe the first day of trade and the market's reception of your company?
So good evening, ma'am. Thank you very much. You know, I've been behind closed doors, so I'm really not sure what the market did today. You know, mid-afternoon, I got the thumbs up from a colleague. So, you know, I'm assuming we were well received. You know, I just think, hope that will continue.
Yeah, because some of the communication that you sent out before coming to market was the expectation of how the market would value you. We read reports that you were hoping for a valuation of around 2.2 billion rand in terms of your market valuation, and I'm wondering if you were able to achieve that in today's session, or you don't know, because as you said, you've been behind closed doors.
Yeah, so I referred to the colleague earlier on, so today it was, it certainly ended up something north of 2.2 billion. What the final number is, I'm not sure just yet.
All right. You were on the Cape Town Stock Exchange, however, before that. Just why the decision to move to the JC?
Yeah, so, you know, we have a dual listing. So we were first listed on the Botswana Stock Exchange, which we did in 2017. We had the secondary listing on the Cape Town Stock Exchange. It was always our ambition to list on the Johannesburg Stock Exchange. But, you know, frankly, we were too small, and now we have the scale and the size to list. And fortunately, that's come to fruition.
And give us a picture of who is CA Sales, just in terms of your ownership structure, because prior to a listing, your major marketing investments firm, as well as yourself. Yeah. So talk to us about how this listing changes the ownership structure right now.
Look, I hope I got the gist of it, because you went silent for about 10 seconds. So my apologies. If it was around the ownership structure, currently we have PSG Alpha, part of the BSG stable, owning about 48% of the shares, and the rest are around institutional investors as well as management.
So as you said, you were listed in Botswana before, and in actual fact, you've been in business for a long time. You're still listed in Botswana. But what are your plans now that you are on the JC's main board?
Yeah. So firstly is that, yes, you know, we were incorporated in 2011. But some of our businesses go back 4 and 5 decades, some back to the early 70s. But, you know, our plans are, you know, we're primarily a South African business. Our focus for geographical expansion would be toward East Africa. We are in Zambia, and our intention is to expand into other markets in East Africa, but also in our existing markets to expand with additional services and additional channels.
What is the business case that is driving your expansion? You seem quite optimistic about the opportunities that lie ahead in the rest of the continent, and I guess we're just trying to find out what those are.
Yeah, so, you know, I think that our business model lends itself to Africa and developing markets. So, you know, I think that if you look at the macro stuff, if you take Africa's population going from 1 billion to 2.5 billion, by 2050, you factor in rapid urbanization, and rapid urbanization is often a catalyst for formal retail. Our business model lends itself to that. And then, you know, albeit off a low base, we have a growing middle class in the region. And so our business is around branded consumer goods. And, you know, I think those things bode well for us. So, yes, you know, it's not without its challenges, but think by and large, we are well placed.
And how will this expansion be funded?
So, you know, I think if you listen to what we said, we're going to try and be a 20 billion rand business by 2026. That is really the dream, and it is ambitious. We can fund certainly the growth in the short to medium term internally. We do have further expansion plans, whether it's other services, other geographies, and if needs be, we can raise capital on the markets.
And when will you know where the needs does be? I mean, at what point, what kind of scenario needs to be presented to you for you to know that it is the right time to look to the market and look to your shareholders to raise capital?
Yeah, look, I think that, you know, we are concerned about, you know, the cost of money. We are conservative by nature. By and large, our strategy is a client-led expansion strategy, whether it's new markets or new services. And if an acquisition comes along that we think is complementary to our existing business, then that'll be the time to decide how and where we raise capital, if necessary.
Can I ask who some of your clients are? I was looking at your website, and it talks about some blue chip clients, so really important people in the FMCG sector. Didn't really get as many names, and I was just intrigued as to who some of your customers are.
Yeah, so, you know, as you know, we operate in the consumer packaged goods space. Our clients specialize in home care, personal care, snacking, treating, and food. The clients locally would be the likes of Tiger Brands, for example, Pioneer Foods, Premier Brands, but also we do global businesses, for example, like Colgate-Palmolive, like Kimberly-Clark, Pfizer, Beiersdorf, who are the brand owners of Nivea. We do Reckitt Benckiser, British American Tobacco, Coca-Cola, Diageo, Heineken, AB InBev. So we have, you know, we're very privileged to represent these brand owners.
Really blue chip. They're really big names, local and global names that you've mentioned. But Duncan, yes, you did mention your concerns around the cost of money right now, and you're talking about interest rates that are going up. And are going up because inflation is really high in most parts of the world. And I'd like to understand how you're dealing with the pressures of inflation, of costs, particularly being a player that's responsible for moving goods around the continent, where we do know that's not always the easiest thing to do because of the fact that the roads are not always in the best conditions and other supporting infrastructure is not necessarily up to scratch.
Yeah. So, you know, obviously we're concerned about inflation, how it impacts shoppers and consumers. But, you know, I think what are we doing to mitigate that? I think that we focus on, first of all, capability building. And a large part of that capability building exercise is around the investment in technology. And that is around making sure that we are mining efficiencies, so that we're reducing the fat in the business, mining the white spaces, and we have several initiatives in place around resource deployment models, around making sure that we're more efficient tomorrow than today. So it's just a continuous journey. So our emphasis is around capability building, technology, people, to make sure that we mine the effectiveness and the efficiencies.
Just lastly, what does your growth, what could your growth mean for jobs in South Africa and perhaps in the other markets in which you operate? Just given the fact that we know employment and unemployment in most parts of South Africa as well as the rest of the continent is quite a sore issue right now.
Absolutely. I think the latest numbers of unemployment in South Africa are north of 45%, which is massively concerning. But we employ over 12,000 people in the 8 countries where we operate. And it stands to reason if we are able to grow our top line in a sustainable and profitable way, naturally we're employing more people. And so, you know, I think that our story is a good one as far as future employment is concerned. Our job is to make sure we just do the right things. And if we do the right things, it'll manifest in the right results. And the benefit of that is employing more people in these regions.
All right, Duncan, thanks so much for your time and your patience with us. We're certainly looking forward to tracking your growth and engaging you along that journey. That was Duncan Lewis. He's the CEO of CA Sales, the latest member on the Johannesburg Stock Exchange main board today.
Phoebe Peters on SAFM.
We had results coming out of PPC earlier today, and they're an important company. They are one of South Africa's largest, if not largest, cement players. They've been making good strides in terms of turning their fortunes around. One of the biggest headaches they had for some time was debt. It was over 6 billion at one stage, and they've brought it down considerably. But profits this time around were not the best. Inflation issues, hyperinflation issues in Zimbabwe were a big problem for the company. In fact, Zimbabwe was quite responsible for increasing their revenues. So Zimbabwe had a positive role to play in that regard. But also hyperinflation in that country at 85% led to a significant erosion of its profits, as well as the significant depreciation in the Zimbabwe dollar. But my colleague, managing editor of MoneyWeb, Rake Fanikak, spoke with CEO Roland van Wijnen for more on the results. Let's listen in.
PPC is the largest cement producer in South Africa, and the company reported full year results today. It was for the 12 months to the end of March, and during this period, the group's revenues rose by 11% to 9.9 billion rand. The group's headline earnings per share came in at minus 3 cents, and that follows a plus 3% performance last year. And but the group had very, very strong cash flows, and the group's net debt reduced from 2.2 billion rand to 1 billion rand. The board did not declare a dividend. Roland van Veenen is on the line. He's the chief executive. Roland, thank you so much for joining me. It seems like it was a difficult year for a PPC and that you may have battled a lot with rising input costs. How would you summarize the year?
Yeah, thank you, Rick. It's a different story a little bit in a different market. So Zimbabwe and Rwanda, strong volume growth, as we expected. South Africa, muted growth, also as we expected. Of course, the growth normally is much in line with what is happening in the economy. Inflation across all our input costs in all our countries, you're absolutely right. Despite that, thanks to cost mitigation measures and to some extent also price increases, the cash generation, as you indicated, was actually strong. So we speak about resilient performance despite challenging trading conditions.
How significant is the South African contribution to the group's earnings?
It's an important portion of it. So it's still more than half of our revenue is coming out of South Africa. The same for our EBITDA. Also, more than half of our EBITDA is coming out of South Africa. So South Africa is and will remain the engine for PPC.
The government has announced on several occasions that it will focus on infrastructure investment to try and boost the economy. Of course, I think in every single infrastructure project, you use a huge amount of cement. Have you seen any increase in demand flowing from government's infrastructure plans?
I wouldn't say that we have seen in South Africa any meaningful increase in demand from the government projects, the large government projects. What is positive for us, though, is that what we see at the local municipality level, there actually smaller projects are happening. But the large infrastructure projects that we're all hoping for and waiting for and that are sitting in the tenders that the construction companies speak about still have to filter down to the cement industry.
Government also announced that local infrastructure projects should only use locally produced cement. And of course, PPC is the largest producer of cement in the country. What do you think of that announcement? And do you think it will make a meaningful impact on local producers like yourselves?
As we mentioned when this was announced, I think it's fantastic that the government has recognized that the use of local cement is important. The real question is, of course, how are you actually going to implement that? You also know that you're not supposed to drive through a red robot, hence a lot of people still do it. So if there is no consequences and no maintaining of that law, then it has no meaningful impact. And so far we see that the impact is limited because there are limited large infrastructure projects, and maintaining that same law is going to be difficult. So what we are pleading for is still a general protection from the dumping that we see happening from various countries in the world to bring cement into the country and destroying employment.
How much of the cement we use in South Africa is imported?
So if we look at it, it's about 1.4 million metric tons. That is the equivalent of a full cement plant that employs hundreds of people directly and thousands indirectly.
20-30%?
It's 10% of the total market, approximately.
And that 10% can have an influence on the pricing in South Africa. Is it significant enough to have such a big impact?
Well, it sets the prices, of course. It's not the only driver of prices in the market, but it will set the market there where it lands. And as I said before, in our opinion, it's a clear case of dumping that we would like the government to investigate.
Would that have an impact on pricing?
So it will not have an impact on pricing directly. Pricing are largely determined by our input factors. So electricity going up, coal going up, fuel going up, or going down. It works in both directions. There is so much capacity in the South African market that the price is set actually by local competition. So in that sense, I'm not so concerned. The key thing for me is actually the availability of the product. The moment the country becomes too dependent on imports, you know, those imports come and go, depending on availability in offshore locations. And I think that is the key thing, plus the employment that I've mentioned before.
Your revenues rose by 11%. How much of that comes from price inflation?
So if we look at South Africa, let's make it as the main engine, we were confronted with a 9% cost increase of our input cost. We managed to reduce that by 6, thanks to efficiency measures, and we increased prices by 5. So for our South African cement, the revenue increase is 5% driven by price and 1% by volume.
And the new financial year, it seems as if PPC is sorting out the balance sheet, and obviously that allows you to take your head out from under the hood and look at new strategic opportunities. What do you expect for the new year?
So it does, and I'm happy to say that, you know, we have now restored, this is past tense, our balance sheet, so that is in order. That allows us, if we continue to generate the cash amounts that we have generated in the last financial year, to rethink about dividends as one of our priorities. And secondly, to invest in decarbonization of our cementitious products.
Roland, thank you so much for your time today. That was Roland van Wijnen, the Chief Executive of PPC.
If you want to get more when you're traveling, shopping or investing, you should get Shift, the global money app. You see, Shift offers you more no matter how you use it. You get more US dollars, British pounds, Aussie dollars and euros for your rands, with the best forex rates in real time 24/7 wherever you bank. How about more shares and ETFs in almost 400 global companies? Yes, you get those too. And you even get virtual cards to make traveling and shopping overseas remarkably quick and easy. So why not get more of the world? Visit getshift.co.za or your app store and download Shift, powered by Standard Bank. Shift operates under the FSP license of Standard Bank.
Phoebe Peters on SAFM.
Yeah, that's right. That's the SAFM market update coming to you from Accra in Ghana, still where we are testing out these new technologies and the investments that have been made by the telecoms companies to enable us to work from anywhere. Talking technology, interesting news coming out of technology group at Naspers and Process today. So sometimes going back on your word is not the worst thing that you can do, especially when the market didn't like the initial promise that you made. So today, Naspers said that it would be selling down a further stake in its Chinese crown jewel, that is tech giant Tencent, in its latest intervention to try and create more value for its shareholders. Back in 2021, when Naspers sold a stake in Tencent, also around 3%, I believe it was, it said that it didn't plan to do so for another 3 years. But alas, that promise seems to be history for now. We do have Mike Grissi, the portfolio manager at Anchor Capital, joining us for more on the story. Mike, the market seemed really ecstatic about the announcement that came back from Naspers and Process today, just regarding creating further value for shareholders, I'm sure, like Anchor Capital. Just your initial comments on what was announced today.
Yeah, good evening, PC, and good evening to everyone listening in. Yeah, honestly, it really was big news. I think the market had anticipated, you know, given the build-up to these results, that something was coming, and I think, in fact, that a share buyback announcement was, you know, widely anticipated. But the big news that I think really moved the share price was just the manner in which Naspers and Process are going to be doing it. So, yeah, as you correctly pointed out, now they've announced that they're going to be selling down small amounts of Tencent to fund that share buyback. And as a result, it's going to be significantly larger than I think what the market had previously expected. So it is a big change in you know, strategy or tone around how they've spoken about Tencent in the past. You know, that, you know, up to now, we had been under the impression that there was a lockup that prevented them selling any further Tencent shares for a period of 3 years after the sell down last year. So this is a big development, and you're dead on that the market reacted very positively to it. It is, you know, extremely positive news.
Mm-hmm. But I do understand that they've been buying back their shares this entire past year, right? And I just would like to understand the efficacy of that share buyback that has been taking place, in order to, I imagine one of the reasons, just get a more favorable rating on from the market. How effective has that been so far?
So, in truth, not very effective. I mean, if you torture the numbers enough, you can show that when they were doing it, it had a, I guess, a small impact. But, you know, the quantum of it, and it wasn't small. I mean, they've been, you know, the last buyback was $5 billion of Process shares. So, you know, in rand terms, it's a proper number. But, you know, honestly, it had very little impact. What changes now, I think, is just the sheer firepower of what they're now able to throw at it. So, you know, in the past, I think that they were correct that NASPERS was very much, or Prosus was very much, a business that was asset rich but cash poor, as an explanation for why they hadn't gone that aggressively at share buybacks. But now that they have the ability to sell down part of the Tencent stake on an ongoing basis to fund share buybacks, it completely changes the equation. The valuation of the Tencent stake at the moment, I calculate, is around about $134 billion. So it just gives you a sense of the, you know, magnitude if they start to sell down, you know, what they could throw at this. That said, I mean, I certainly don't think, this is my own view, that they are going to be, you know, looking to sell the whole stake by any means. I think it is going to be a very gradual sell down. And my sense is that they're going to look to retain a meaningful and, you know, potentially well north of 20% stake in Tencent. So, you know, this I don't see at this point, at least, as being, you know, a plan to exit Tencent or anything like that.
Because they've done a few things to try and make shareholders happy, right? I think the initial unbundling of a process from Naspers and the listing of that over in Europe was also part of ways to create better value for shareholders, along with the buyback that we have just spoken about. So these new measures, which I do believe also include a divesting from the JD Group, should we take the reaction from the share price today as an indication that the market thinks that this latest intervention will actually work?
Yeah, I think you can probably take it as that. No doubt some of the other things that it did, and you mentioned, you know, first of all, the creation of Prosus. And then obviously what we had last year was the share exchange, where shareholders were offered the opportunity to exchange shares that they owned in Naspers for shares in Prosus. You know, both of those, in theory, I suppose, created value, but, you know, they came with problems as well. So, you know, when they created Prosus, the problem with that is that you essentially just introduced a new company between Naspers and the ownership of the underlying investments. So you've got effectively a double discount. And then with the share exchange last year, you got a great deal of complexity that was created, because what arose as a result of the share exchange was what we call a cross-holding structure, where, you know, Naspers owned shares in Prosus and Prosus owned shares in Naspers. And what we saw very clearly was that the market does not like complexity. So, you know, this transaction, in terms of now proceeding with a share buyback, I think is a lot simpler, it's a lot cleaner. It's something that the market's been looking for and arguing that management should be doing for the longest time. And at this stage, I can't really see any meaningful downside. So, you know, there's a clear message that the market likes it. Obviously, given where the discount is, it's very, very accretive. You know, essentially, what Prosus and Naspers are doing is taking a rand of cash from the sale of Tencent shares and, you know, buying back almost multiples of that in terms of NAV. So, yeah, it looks great. I have to say, I can't fault anything at this point.
All right. So, bowing down to shareholder pressure, but my question is, why now? Because we have seen the Chinese technology space come under quite a bit of pressure throughout this pandemic, mainly due to regulation and the fact that the government over there has tightened its hand on what companies can and cannot do in the technology space. And it's made your jobs a lot more difficult, I suppose, in calculating the growth and the earnings of these companies. So why do you think that Naspers and the Prosus Group are choosing to listen to shareholders now? And do you think this has got anything to do with their dislike of the operating environment in China right now and moves for them to reduce exposure to such tight regulation?
Yeah, that's a very, very interesting and very good question that you raised there. So, now, first of all, I think in part the decision to do this stems purely from just how wide the discount has been in the last few months. And, you know, we've seen both the Prosus and Naspers discount blow out to levels we've never seen historically. So that's one thing that no doubt forced their hand, just the extremeness of it. And then, you know, at the same time that they've announced they'll be selling down gradually, they reiterated a great deal of support for the Tencent business and the future prospects that it has. But I guess, you know, you wouldn't really expect them to say anything different. And you know, while the regulatory onslaught has dissipated to a large extent now, and the bullish school of thought is that it's largely done and behind the sector, there's also a sense out there that possibly the only thing that's happened is that, you know, the economy in China is struggling and they've committed to growth targets. And with this all-important Chinese Communist Party conference coming up at the end of the year, where Xi Jinping is looking for a third term, it's really important to them that they be seen to be hitting targets. And hence, they've eased off on regulation. And you know, there are rumblings that maybe once the conference is out the way, that that regulatory onslaught will resume. That, you know, that remains to be seen. But it does give one a sense that perhaps the, you know, the excitement and pizzazz and entrepreneurial spirit that the likes of Tencent has will not be as strong going forward. There's a lot of talk that these big platforms are going to become more like utilities. I certainly hope that's not the case. But maybe, you know, you've hit the nail on the head that, you know, suddenly there's a shift in emphasis here, and they just see better opportunity to redeploy capital outside of China. And, you know, the mm-hmm. more authoritarian move by Chinese authorities, you know, is causing them to rethink that. Certainly, they're not admitting that publicly, but I think you make a good point.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so let's take stock of today's move. So Naspers finishing over 22% higher, Process finishing over 18% higher, except when you take a step back, both stocks are down meaningfully for the year. Is it a good time to get in right now, just given the discount that has been offered in the past year, or should we still sit on the fence just waiting to see what happens next? Or is it a good time to sell? What would you advise us?
So I think based on what I heard on the conference call today, you know, they are intending to keep buying back shares even at a discount materially tighter than where it's been. So the case, in the case of Naspers, the discount reached a level of almost 70%. They were talking about being prepared to buy back shares even at discounts of 40% or below. So that support, I think, has further to run. And then really, I think it's a case of saying, looking at the operating performance of their classified, their e-commerce division, I was quite encouraged by what I saw in terms of the growth momentum. So, you know, that operation is looking good. And then it looks as if we're starting to see better news around the Chinese tech scene in general, and you've seen Tencent beginning to perform a lot better. And certainly expectation is at this stage, at least, that into the second half of the year, you know, operationally Tencent and its peers in China are going to be looking a lot better. So, you know, my sense is there's still more to go here. That's the long and the short of it. Yeah, you've missed a little bit today, but I'm still pretty confident that there's more to go. And, you know, as a long-term shareholder, I think it still represents one of the best and most interesting stories that we have on the South African market. It's really the only way to play, in size at least, the sort of global tech opportunity, which I think will capture a growing share of value as it has in the past over time. So, yep, I would be happy to be buying it at these levels, even though, you know, you perhaps wish that you knew now back on Friday. And had the opportunity to buy then. I would still be a buyer.
All right. Thanks for the advice, Mike. Heck, you're still buying at a discount. As I said, the stock is down for the year. Process down 36% year to date. So you're still getting a bit of a discount there. And Naspers' stock is also quite low, down 23%. So if you did miss today's ride, perhaps catch in tomorrow if that is what you want to do. But that was Mike Gristy, who is the portfolio manager at Anchor Capital.
You're listening to Fifi Peters on SAFM.
It's your favorite time of the year again, I think. If you do enjoy paying Caesar, what is due to Caesar? Or you do enjoy getting paid from Caesar, what's due to you? So I'm talking about tax season, and that starts up on Friday up until the 24th of October if you're not a provisional taxpayer. And a provisional taxpayer are people who earn income outside of their standard salaries. And most people like that have a lot more paperwork to do when it comes to preparing their taxes for SARS. And they've got a little bit more time to get that done up until the 23rd of January. But anyway, there have been some changes that have been introduced this new tax season, including new rules to SARS's auto assessment process. And joining us for that discussion is Pieter Janse van Rensburg, who is the director at AJM Tax. Pieter, thanks so much for your time. Let's start there with the changes to the auto assessment process. Just tell us what those are and whether they are changes for the better or not.
Fifi, good evening. You're quite right that there has been a change in the so-called auto assessments from the 2020 and 21 year to what we will see now transpire in the 2022 year of assessment. The most significant of those changes is that in previous years of assessment, the auto assessments was really just a pre-population of an income tax return. The information that SARS obtained from third parties, from banks, from medical aids, from your employer, etc., was pre-populated in your income tax return, and taxpayers could then either accept that pre-populated return or they could then make amendments to it. Now, that was previously. What we'll see in the 2022 year assessment is that SARS actually uses that information that it gathers from third parties to assess an income tax return based on the estimate of information that it has received. So the legal mechanism is slightly different. Whereas previously only had a pre-populated return, the auto assessment, this year of assessment, is actually an assessment that is issued by SARS.
All right. So it sounds like it's a positive change on all fronts. But if there happens to be any query that you have based on SARS's assessment, is there anything you can do about it?
Absolutely, Fifi. And I think it's very important that once taxpayers have received communication from SARS, either through SMS or by way of email, that they have been subject to the so-called auto assessments, that they immediately verify the information that has pulled through on that assessment. Now, there's a couple of ways in which you can verify that information. Firstly, it's with reference to your own source documents, where you have received income tax certificates from your employer, IRB5, or from your medical aid scheme, from banking institutions that show interest in capital gains tax transactions. Those are your own source documents. And then what's also interesting, and that SARS has made it as easy as possible for taxpayers to verify the information that pulls through on the assessment, is that there's a new functionality on e-filing where taxpayers can actually go and view the information that was submitted by third parties. In other words, if your bank declared certain amounts of interest that you earned during the year of assessment to SARS, there's a new functionality on e-filing where you can view the information and then compare it back to your own source documents. So in that regard, it's quite easy to identify discrepancies between what has been reported to SARS and then, of course, what has pulled through on the assessment. The one thing that the system, unfortunately, does not cater for is for taxpayers to verify the completeness of returns. As I said, the system of the auto assessment is very heavily reliant on information that's been submitted to SARS by third parties. It's very important that taxpayers also consider the completeness of those assessments. In other words, if you earned rental income, income from a different trade, being a sole proprietor, or even the sale of crypto assets, then it's very important that information that hasn't been submitted to SARS and on which you haven't been assessed, that you then rectify those assessments to make sure that you get taxed on your full taxable income. Otherwise, you might be subject to stringent penalties and interest.
All right. Other than what you've shared so far, particularly the information around the changes to the auto assessment process, anything you think is important for us to know about this year's tax season?
Vivi, yes. I think this year is very much a test case for how the new system will work. The term auto-assessment and the process that will be followed is not prescribed in the Tax Administration Act. And SARS is essentially using a mechanism that really wasn't developed for mass population of assessments to try to push this through. The system is based on estimated assessments, and that's a legal term that is provided for in the Tax Administration Act. But estimated assessments are really made for specific types of circumstances where SARS can issue assessments. The taxpayer community is somewhat concerned that these estimated assessments that are now being used for the automated assessments aren't quite made for the way in which they intend to use it. At a recent industry discussion between tax practitioners, one person made the comment that SARS is trying to run before they can walk, and I think there is definitely merits in that comment. We haven't tested the legal mechanisms. SARS is still busy testing the technology, and we're not quite sure about the practicalities and how this auto-assessment system will play out in the year. So I think if there ever was a year of assessment where taxpayers really had to employ the services of a registered tax practitioner, this would be the year in which to do so. The mere fact that you previously might not have been required to submit income tax returns, or you really tended to those returns yourself, I think that this year it really, really becomes important that taxpayers employ expert help to assist them through that process. It's also very important because the system will work on communication between SARS and taxpayers, either through SMS or email. That taxpayers ensure that their contact details and bank details are up to date as soon as possible. If SARS sends SMSs to numbers that are no longer monitored or email addresses that are no longer monitored, taxpayers might land in a situation where they miss critical information from SARS and then be prejudiced in that regard. As far as banking details go.
All right. Sorry, Peter, we are out of time, but thanks so much for that.
Sure.
That advice, lots of changes on the go, might introduce a bit of complications as the system is still new. So really important to get yourself some help in understanding those changes and making the process a lot more efficient. I just add, it's important to get the right help. From personal experience, I had a tax guy and he was not very good. I've got a new tax guy who's doing a lot of cleanup in terms of mess. So just make sure that you get the right help for that, just given that it is a service that you'll have to pay for. But that's Peter Janser van Rensburg, Director at AJM Tax.
The SAFM Market Update was brought to you by Shift. Get Shift, the global money app powered by Standard Bank, and get the best forex rates for traveling, shopping, and investing, no matter where you bank.
If you want to get more when you're traveling, shopping, or investing, you should get Shift, the global money app. You see, Shift offers you more no matter how you use it. You get more US dollars, British pounds, Aussie dollars, and euros for your rands, with the best forex rates in real time 24/7, wherever you bank. How about more shares and ETFs in almost 400 global companies? Yes, you get those too. And you even get virtual cards to make traveling and shopping overseas remarkably quick and easy. So why not get more of the world? Visit getshift.co.za or your app store and download Shift, powered by Standard Bank. Shift operates under the FSP license of Standard Bank.
And we're out. Thanks so much for listening from Accra, Ghana this evening. Handing you back to the news desk at SAFM for your 7 o'clock bulletin. It's goodbye.